Welcome to the Local Fauna Podcast. I'm your host, Priscilla Atropine. Local Fauna was originally a talk show that aired on Asheville FM in 2019 and 2020. The episode you are about to hear first aired on June 14th, 2019. In this episode, I discuss the magic of bees with my longtime friend and bee expert, Sarah McKinney. In 2020, Sarah was killed in a car crash, and I dedicate the Local Fauna Podcast to her memory. Local Fauna focuses on aspects of living that Sarah and people like her care about, including living life in harmony with nature, celebrating the spiritual aspects of everyday life, creativity, industry, and magic. Thank you for taking the time to join me. I hope that you enjoy the show. With me in the station today is my longtime friend. I shouldn't say that. It's very unprofessional. But a wonderful longtime Asheville resident, Sarah McKinney of Honey and the Hive. And now your mic is on.
Oh, hi. Hey, everybody.
Thank you so much for being here. And they call you the Bee Whisperer. By the end of this hour, we are going to fully understand why they call Sarah the Bee Whisperer. But so tell us a little bit about, so Honey in the Hive is a store, mm-hmm. and you have a practice as well, and you're an educator and a storyteller. And tell us a little bit about your work.
Sure. Honey in the Hive is a wonderful, unique store. It's in downtown Weaverville, and we're sort of on the front line, so to speak, of what's happening with bees in the beekeeping world, and we support beekeepers there. Sometimes we're not really sure if the business model's working, that we give out so much free advice and so much service work, and while we're still a for-profit business, but somehow it all seems to come together. I think the bees somehow make it work. So we answer questions for beekeepers every day, and we educate them and support them, and obviously we help them with their supply needs as well, and that kind of thing. So we do a lot of really awesome service work in the store there. And then as far as my work, I'm a beekeeper. I've been a beekeeper for about 11 years, and I do a lot of consultant work, so that really helps get me out there in the field to see what's happening. And I've tried to reduce my numbers down this year, but then the bees just went nuts this year. So it's like I run about anywhere from 80 to 150. I think I'm about at 80 right now. But my kids, whenever they count the hives, they're always like, no, it's way more than that. So we'll just leave it at that. Mm-hmm. So it seems more manageable that way. So.
And so your hives are on your property, other people's properties? Like, where are the hives?
It's a variety of different things. Like, I definitely have quite a bit on my property. And then there's several other farms that I've reduced it down to where there's just a couple of farms that I beekeep for. So some of the colonies that I take care of don't actually belong to me. They definitely belong to someone else, and I just take care of them from sometimes start to finish. Sometimes it's just up until I pull the honey off for them, and then they take it from there.
Okay. And would they be asking for this service from you because they have things that they are growing, and this is a part of their the function of their farm or garden?
Yeah, that's like a big part. And most of the people, it seems like, that I've worked for now, it seems to be more like just helping out beekeepers that are having a particular problem, and then I'll go out and maybe just, you know, help them solve what's going on. But the other people that, you know, have more colonies, they're also wanting to support bees and make a difference out there in the
right.
world. And so they're just wanting to help the populations as well as to pollinate what they have on their farms.
So there's a few different reasons why it would why people would get into it and why it would be a benefit to someone's life to have a relationship with the bees and to have the bees present. You might make products from many of the things that come from the hive.
Correct.
Yeah. Or you may be wanting to be a part of helping some of the issues that have been happening for bees on the planet.
Yes.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. It's whenever I speak about bees, I often, for years, I've been saying that it's never been more challenging to keep bees than it is today. And I really meant that when I would say it over the years. But the last year has really stepped that up a notch. It's taken it to a whole nother level. Last year, coming out of winter, we sustained here in North Carolina, it was 60% losses. And in Tennessee, it was 80% losses. We were cruising along with 20 and 30% losses and saying that was unsustainable prior to that. So it was a really big leap and really, you know, shocked and scared me. I was definitely like, how are we going to eat? Like, you know, so it really made me step up my game. I've always been very diligent in helping with education and helping beekeepers. But I really realized that, you know, it's never been more serious than it is now. And so basically, the things that are contributing to that are a couple of different factors. It's really how we grow our food and treat our lawns. You know, Americans love to dump lots of chemicals on our lawns, and that's creates like a toxic wasteland for us, but definitely for the bees, and not good for them. And then, you know, raising food with all these pesticides and all that horrible things that we do to food nowadays is really bad for the bees, obviously. And then also monocrops, you know, it's, you know, if I eat spinach every day, spinach is very healthy, but I would become malnourished eating the same food all the time. And it's the same thing for the bees when we put them off on this property that there's no other food but this one source. And so that's not, that's a big part of it as well. And then, also, it's, you know, we are mowing down tons of trees to make room for more houses, and that's a lot of their food there, too, as well as America loves our lawns. And lawns, they don't feed me, they don't feed you, they don't feed our honeybees or anybody else. So it's the more you can get rid of your lawns and turn it back into a flowering patch of awesomeness.
Oh, I love that idea. That would save a lot of gasoline and a lot of Sundays.
Yeah. I have a lot of people that come into the store. I often tell this one story about this one, a real Southern lady that comes into the store. She's really, really sweet. And she always wants to, she lives in a really nice neighborhood, and she's always wanting to do something for the bees. And she's always like, Sarah, honey, what can I do for the honey bees? I just want to save the honey bees. And I'm always like, well, you know, you can start keeping bees. And she's like, oh, I don't want to keep the bees. I just want to save the bees. And so I say, well, you know, you buy local honey, you come in here and do that. That's a big contribution right there and supporting local beekeepers. And I was like, well, you could just grow up a patch of your lawn if you want, you know. And she was like, oh, Sarah, I live in a fancy neighborhood, and if I let my grass grow up any higher than a couple of inches, I would get a ticket written up right away.
Oh, my word. A ticket.
Yes. So I just told her, like, well, why don't you just do a little, you know, cool fence around it, and then let the, you know, let the flowers, or, you know, do some wildflowers or something like that, and put a little sign that says, you know, food for the bees. And she went away, and you know, I didn't think she took me to heart, but then she busted in the door that next spring and was like, Sarah, you are never going to believe it. I did just what you said, and I put this cute little fence around, and I let the grass grow up and planted a bunch of flowers and put a little sign there that said food for the bees, and now everybody in the neighborhood has to have one.
Well,
so it's a little goes
work.
A long way.
That's great.
And you see them pop up all over, like West Asheville. I see them, like, sometimes it's just like public property that somebody's taken over and made a little patch of, you know, food for the bees. And that's, you can be considered a beekeeper if you're doing that. You're keeping them on the planet. So,
and we also have some trees around here that are pretty integral to some of our fantastic local honey.
Yes.
I had the pleasure of being a part of a Black Jar honey tasting event that was at, I guess, when the Bee Charmer was down the street down here in West Asheville. And it was a sourwood that won, and there were honeys from all over the world. It was pretty incredible. So that's a wonderful tree. I've been learning about our wild plants and trees and herb school.
So we're super lucky around here. Most of our main honey flows come from trees that nobody's going to be spraying or doing anything to anyways, or genetically altering or anything like that. So we're pretty lucky in these parts that our bees actually get good nutritional sources that aren't really tainted with, you know.
So. Okay, fantastic. So honey flows, there's a bee term.
Yeah.
So that would be referring to the pipeline of honey.
And it's actually, we've misused that word. It's actually a nectar flow, but we always say honey flow. So because the nectar comes from the blossoms, the bees gather it, they bring it back, and then they fan it down to become what we know as honey.
And so you were talking about only having one food source. So talking about a bee in an agricultural environment, and say there's a big field of something that's being pollinated, and there's a nutrition issue there. So that's a part of the continuum. So honey is bringing that diversity of where the nectar is coming from. And that's an important part of its nutritive value, is mm-hmm. not only to the bee, but to the honey itself. Is that true?
That is true. Like, and that's why not having just one source is really important. They're really faithful. Their fidelity, honeybees are really well known. That's why they can pollinate one particular crop, is they usually just stick with that one. So whatever the major flow is. But it's really important, because that flow, once that's gone, it's gone. So that's why all these different crops are so important. If you have a variety of different things blooming, and you know, some hedge crops going on too, then you're constantly providing unique nutritional resources for the bees that will keep them going in between the major flows. And so that's super important.
Wonderful. And so people can purchase local honey at Honey in the Hive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's great. So some of the other issues I think you mentioned about bee loss are related to keeping hives. So I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about how individuals can address these issues. And I know that there are some parasite issues that come up that when I was taking your class at the Organic Growers School Conference, I learned that there is a common mite that certain techniques can help to minimize. Can you tell us about that as well?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. The varroa mites are our biggest thing, and climate change can't be left out of that conversation because of the way the varroa mite works. Now that we don't have a true winter, that's a natural varroa mite treatment. So that also gets sort of wrapped in when you start talking about varroa mites. But we brought varroa mites over in the 80s. Often when I say that, people always ask, on purpose? And no, it wasn't intentional. It was a unfortunate accident that we brought them over. But now that they're here, that in the 80s, they wiped out like 80% of our all our feral hives when they first got over here in that first year. And they really started to sound the alarms and the almond crops and things like that with the beekeepers there, which, that's a whole nother topic.
We'll touch on that. We're going to talk about almonds.
But the varroa mites are, Dr. Samuel Ramsey I love him. He's just an amazing person. And he's the one actually recently discovered what the varroa mites are feeding on. And that really changed the game for all of us as beekeepers. Once we were really aware of what the varroa mites are doing to the bees, it really changed our efforts in really trying to monitor those mite loads and really keep them low, because that's how you can keep healthy bees, is if you can keep them low. It's the same, no different with your dog or your cats or chickens or goats. You wouldn't let a parasite that's going to kill them get out of control and kill them. You obviously keep it in control. So, and you don't want to over-treat or, but luckily we do have natural treatments that we can use, essential oils and some natural compounds and stuff that we can use.
So I don't have any hives. Part of my, having you here and learning about this stuff is because I know that's something that I would like to do. And yet when I hear about something right off the bat, like a pest, I go, maybe I'm not up to it. Tell me about the process of how somebody like me can begin to tap in and not bring poison into the scene, because of course I'm going to be feeding this honey to my family. So I want it to be as clean as possible, as nutritive as possible. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely killing a bug on a bug is a very, very difficult thing. So, being a beekeeper it's never been more challenging, like I said, than it is today. And so you really have to be, it can be overwhelming, and it's one of those things. It's not sea monkeys. A lot of people come into it thinking it like it used to be. You could just put them in your backyard and you're done. The old timers always say, get a gum and put it in your backyard and you're done.
Get a gum?
Get a gum. Yeah. That's what they used to call them a long time ago.
Okay.
And so, so nowadays it's not like that. You usually have to go in about every 5 to 7 days, and you really have to stay committed to your bees. It's easy when you first get your bees. Everybody's like very like excited and into it. Some people can be a little intimidated, and they do come in the store like after they've had their bees for a month and been like, yeah, I haven't gotten into them and I'm really nervous. And I'm like, whoa.
Oh, haven't opened the box yet.
Yeah, I'm
yet.
Like, whoa, okay. Go in there. Please go in there and check on them. They need you. Because once we put them in a box, it's our responsibility to take care of them. Just like if we purchased or captured or anything, any animal and brought them into a different situation than they are in nature, it's our responsibility to take care of them. And so So it basically involves that. You have to have a lot of education nowadays. So most people have to at least read at least one or two books, and they need to take at least one or two classes. Like I said, I teach classes at the Bee Store that are hands-on and lecture a wide variety of things there. And then I try to bring in really interesting beekeepers, too, from the surrounding area to teach some classes, too, to get a little more variety so everybody's just not always listening to me talk about bees. So, but there's nothing like it, though. It is like... I mean, I've been doing it for all these years, and I do it for a living. So, I'm in bees a lot, and not a day goes by that the hair does not stand up on the back of my neck being with these amazing beings. So once you get into them and catch the fever, it's pretty addictive. And so once somebody commits to bees, then it's a little bit easier to stick with it. But yeah, it can be overwhelming and is not for everybody. And so if you decide, I would say if you're going to get into bees, definitely get some education. And if it seems like too much at first, then you can always do, there's several things that you can do, you know, to save the bees. You can plant lots of food, like we talked about, in your yard. You can let patches of your yard grow up. You can quit using chemicals on your lawn. I got two great things for that. You can just use a blowtorch or gardener grade vinegar. And that way you can just...
Wait, hold on. So you're saying I could mow my yard with a blowtorch?
Sort of.
I want to hear how this works.
So just like your selective things that you like, you know, maybe you go to your yard, like, you and I are going to be very different. We're going to see a weed as something very different than some people who are keeping their lawns very different than we would. We are going to look at a weed and be like, whoa.
Hey, yes. That's so Chan.
Yeah, let's get this going. Like, so more of that. And, but, you know, if there's certain selective things that you feel like are invasive or you want to, like, get rid of it, then you can just use your handy-dandy blowtorch. They're quite fun, too, and just annihilate
that. Fascinating.
Interesting. Gardner-grade vinegar does the same thing as well. So there's two great things you can arm yourself with so you can, you know, walk away from any chemicals on your lawn, you know?
I think that the neighbor pressure is very real. I got home yesterday and my neighbor was weed eating my yard.
Yeah.
I was like, you look like, would you like some water? It's very hot out here right now. And oh, by the way, that plant right there, if you could just leave those, I'd like to put those in floral arrangements. That was my foray into that conversation. Oh man, he just cut a whole bunch of sumac and so that is a real thing. If you don't do something or do some reconnaissance in the neighborhood, that can be a problem.
Yes, a lot of people think you died or something horrible happened. Or my neighbors have done that too, like, you know, thought they were doing the right thing and helped me, like, oh, she's, you know, poor single mom, I'm gonna mow her lawn for her. And I'm like, no, that was, everything was just about to bloom. I know it looks like a weed fest out here, but it was intentional, I promise.
There's got to be some deep allegory there for American life.
Yes,
I can just feel it. So if somebody wanted to get into it, then they could come to you to start, and so you've guided lots and lots of folks towards starting.
Yes.
And they are continuing and are successful. And
I mean, some people do have a hard learning curve their first year and, you know, wind up losing their hives and coming back. But often it can always be traced back to, you know, several things like, you know, beekeeper error or just not being involved, you know, sort of doing that thing where they get excited in the beginning of the year and then forgetting about them when they need you most as we get ready to go through winter. So, you know, it's like that's a thing for sure. But yeah, I can guide everybody right through. We do that every day. People walk in the door and get started. Other people sometimes will come to my free talks that I give to the general public just to teach them about bees, and they'll get that buzz and that fire and want to, you know, join us in this very important work that we're doing.
Great. So that noise that you're hearing in the background is Sarah cracking herself up. What did you say?
I was just checking some terminology there.
You're tuned into
bee biology.
Local Fauna on Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is your hostess, Priscilla Atropine. I'm in the studio with Sarah McKinney of Honey in the Hive, and we are talking about bees and beekeeping and relationships with this amazing creature. And Sarah is going to tell us a little bit about the inner workings of the hive and the life of the bee and their special magic. And you can forget anything that you just overheard. I'm sure it was totally appropriate for morning.
Yes, yes. It's good waking everybody up.
Tell us about your friends. Oh, and before, actually, I'm sorry. So, and on the break, I asked you if it was okay to just mention what someone might be looking at for their initial investment in a hive to get going with your help.
Yeah, yeah. So it's about $800. So that can be a little bit of a gulp, you know, whenever somebody first gets started. But if you really stick to it, you know, and you can easily, I mean, we have all kinds of fun bumper stickers that say, you know, I used to have money and now I'm a beekeeper.
It's better than a boat. So,
But really, if you stick with it and you get your education and you really, you know, these days, the big picture is like, you know, keeping your mite loads, you know, in check. And if you do that, then it goes, you get plenty of honey and plenty of, you know, have tons of bees. So you can really, really turn that around and, you know, at least pay for your habit maybe.
Yes. Nice. So, yeah. So tell me about what happens when you take the lid off. What do you see in there?
What do I see in there? Okay. Yeah. So this is when we all get to fall in love with bees and I'm about to blow everybody's mind.
Yeah.
This is great, great stuff. So, and I could just keep going on forever. So you'll have to check
okay,
me.
I will.
So honeybees are a super organism, and I always joke, you know, that means everybody knows that means they have superhero capes and superhero powers, and they actually really seem like they do when you start to get to know honeybees. It's amazing. They live in these they're highly evolved, and they live in these really well-organized large families, and they engage in a variety of complex tasks in the hive that aren't practiced by solitary insects. Like if you think about the butterfly sort of living out there days, honeybees are quite the opposite. They're very social and they live together, and they have amazing communication. They make our communication look a little primitive and whatnot, because their communication is super important. It's a lot of it's scent and smell, also vibrations that we're just beginning to know some of those meanings and things of the vibration and that aspect of it. They also communicate with dances, which I think is awesome. I don't know why we don't do that as humans. Like, you know, that should be, if you're going to tell somebody a really good location of a restaurant, you should definitely dance.
We sometimes
out.
Do.
Yeah, totally.
I have.
Yes. You would definitely. Yeah. You get it, though. And so those scent and smells are really important because they can really quickly disperse information by just letting off a scent, and everybody knows what's happening. And then their behavior changes according to that scent or smell that's let off. And they also have a complex nest construction, so they don't need Lowe's to go buy their lumber or anything to, like, you know, be able to build any of their homes. They can do it all right with their body.
I'm distracting her by taking a picture. My bad. So cute.
No worries. They can build anything that they need. They don't have to go out like birds and gather anything or anything like that. They build it with their own bodies because they have the ability to make the wax combs their own selves. So they also have environmental control, so they don't need air conditioners and heaters and dehumidifiers. They can do all that with their bodies. It's pretty amazing. And they also have an amazing division of labor. And scientists still don't know how they divide up that labor. You know, I don't know if they, you know, fill out applications and do job interviews, but they do it very effectively, and they put the right girl for the right job. And their defense is really well known as well, and that's a really important part of them being able to defend themselves. And a lot of people just think about the stinger, but it's pretty fascinating to know that they die when they sting you, so they don't really want to do that. So they have another really interesting thing that they do is if a bumblebee comes and flies in the hive that doesn't belong there because it's a bumblebee and not a honeybee, they'll just ball up on it. They'll all, like, run over and jump on top of it, and then they'll start flexing their wings until they rise up the temperature so high that it's almost close to their own perishing death of the temperature is so high. And then and they'll rotate out so nobody gets too hot, but that bumblebee gets so hot that it dies. So that's a interesting way that they can defend themselves. They're pretty powerful beings for such small, amazing, tiny winged beings. So And then, so when you're looking in a hive, it's fascinating. It's like a beautiful city, and each one of them is completely different. You know, it's, you know, going into them, like I said, is just absolutely fascinating and beautiful. And there's actually three different types of bees in the hive. There's a caste system that happens between the worker bees. They're all females, and they make up the majority of the hive. It's mainly a female society, so it runs really well. No, I'm just kidding.
Just kidding.
And then the queen, there's usually one queen in every hive, and then there's also drones, and drones are the boy bees. And I can sort of like walk you through a little bit about which each one of those and what they are and sort of what they do, because it's sort of like, to me, it's always like a little bit of a fascinating story, and maybe will sound like that to you guys. So a lot of times being in this business, people often go, oh, Sarah, queen bee, Sarah. But I'm like, definitely not a queen bee. I'm definitely a worker bee. And you'll, as I explain this, you'll see why. So one thing is they're the smallest bodies adults, and they have these amazing, their bodies are like Swiss Army knives. They have like all these little gadgets on their bodies. I don't know why there's not like a superhero out there. You know, that has all, the superhero things like taken off like crazy in the movies. And I don't understand why there's not a girl honeybee, because she would be awesome. So they make up the majority of the population in the hive, about 60. We think of, if you think of like a colony, that if you look at a stereotypical picture of what a colony looks like in a Langstroth hive, it's about 60,000 worker bees that make up that, and they do all the work. They do everything. The queen doesn't do anything. She just she does something very important, actually. She lays eggs all day. She lays about 1,500 to 2,000 eggs a day, and they just take care of her and all her needs. They listen to her talk about her feelings while she's in labor all day. And they tell her stories, you know, who knows what they all do, but they definitely take really good care of her. But the worker bee's lifespan during the summer months is actually really short, because they're just really, they're go-getters. So they're just like, they're out there flying like crazy. And so their lifespan's usually only about 30 or 40 days during the spring and summer months, during the peak part of the season. But in the winter months, they can actually overwinter and live like 4 to 6 months. They have a little bit more brown fat on them, and they're just sort of reared as a little bit different of a bee. You can't really see the difference in it, but they are. And then they raise up the next generations that come out. And then the worker bees' bodies, like I was talking about, are pretty cool, because it's they have these awesome pollen baskets on their hind legs that look really cute when they come into the hive. They look like slippers, because they're so you can't see the rest of their legs because they're so tiny. So they look like they're wearing these huge slippers when they come into the hive. And they produce different pheromones and scents in their bodies. They have these glands that can help communicate, like we talked about before. And then the famous stinger, of course, that everybody's a little bit worried about. But like I said, they die when they sting you. So I don't really tend bees with really any gear. I'll wear like a veil, but it's usually tank top, rolled up pants, flip flops, or and barefooted most of the time. So they're really docile and gentle. So.
And you had mentioned getting stung earlier, you said, which actually, I know of one case in particular of someone being totally permanently cured of their arthritis by being stung intentionally by a beekeeper, a friend of mine in Denmark. And you talked about having a sting that actually was beneficial to you.
Yeah. Yeah. You want me to tell?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So like that. So I know it sounds all kooky in Asheville, but hey,
we are kooky and we are in Asheville.
Yeah, totally.
So go.
But I often the bees will, they'll heal me and do things for me. They definitely have taken care of me over my life and done amazing things for me. But this one particular sting, my kids and I just bought a house, and it was like god awful. It was a different color paneling in every room. And so we the day I got there, I ripped out all that paneling and the shag carpet and totally got a crick in my neck. And it was the beginning of bee season, and there was a light honey flow on, and this, I just watched this, you know, so there's no reason for them to sting because they were busy bringing in nectar, and usually they're very docile and gentle then. And so I just watched this one bee just like come out, and for whatever reason my eye caught on to her and watched her, and she just zoomed around and floated down and then stung me right on my forearm. And in that instant, it completely cured my crick in my neck. And Willow happened to be at the bee yard that day helping me, my son Willow. And I was like, Willow, the bees just like stung me and cured a crick in my neck. And he was like, oh, Mom, where did they sting you? I've been studying acupuncture. I want to see where it is. And so I showed him, and he was like, wow, that's the place that actually turns your head a little bit to the left or the right whenever you have an acupuncture point right there. So they not only did acupuncture, but they also did chiropractic work on me and got me right back to work. Like, you're not messing around. So yeah.
So sorry. I know I totally derailed you.
No,
so
that's fine.
Yeah, you were talking about the body parts.
Body parts, yeah. So we were talking earlier about royal jelly, and that's another one of the things that they produce
with
their body.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to find out about that, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, because that's like, some people liken it to like humans producing milk for their babies. So like they say that honeybees are an honorary mammal in some ways, because they produce this royal jelly, which all the bees get it. It's a food that the queen gets all of her days. She never eats honey or pollen. She gets royal jelly all of her life, and the worker bees actually produce that food for her, and it's a superfood. It allows her to lay those 1,500 to 2,000 eggs a day, and she lives longer too. She lives 5 years because of that superfood as well. And the bees, the rest of them, the worker bees and the drones, they only get royal jelly for the first 3 days of their life, and then after that, then they're back to honey and or they start on honey and pollen and whatnot. So, and I already talked about wax glands, but it's pretty fascinating all the things that they do, all their duties. They, they clean and polish the cells. They use propolis to sanitize it out.
And that is what again?
So propolis, this is magical plant sap. They gather it from the plants and they bring it back and they caulk it all over. The old timers call it bee caulk, and they caulk it all over the hive, and it suppresses viruses and bacteria.
Right.
And it's amazing medicine for us. We use it in our household for all kinds of things.
Okay.
So it's pretty magical stuff. So, they rear all the baby bees. I always talk about, sort of joke that they must tell the stories, and that must be where all the lineage gets passed down, as the sisters to the other sisters, and where they feed and care for the new babies as they're born. And they organize the food storage. They're very organized and very diligent about how they do everything. So their cells are just, like we were talking about, they're the shape of a crystal. And so it's just fascinating to see all that work that they do and how they organize everything. And they remove anything that's any debris. They handle any incoming nectar or pollen or propolis. They monitor the drone population, because the drones are cool dudes. They really are. They're the boy bees. But they eat three times as much as everybody else in the hive. And they're not.
I know where this is going.
Yeah. And they're sacred beings, so they can, go to all the rest of them, all the worker bees, and the queen has to stay in that hive. They can't go to any other hive, but the drones can. They can drift from hive to hive. And they're just there to work out and eat honey and get buff and go out there and mate. That's their only purpose. They don't have stingers or anything like that. So the worker bees take care of everything, that ventilation of the hive and cooling it and heating it up. They actually keep the brood nest around 97 degrees, and they do that with their own bodies by flexing their wings and heating that up. And then the winter time, that's how they do that as well. And of course, guard the entrance and all that kind of stuff. And often tell the cute story of the day in the life of a honeybee, and it sort of helps give people that idea of like how, what it's like to grow up as a honeybee. So basically what happens is the worker bee, she hatches out of her cell, and her first job is she becomes a house bee. So she sanitizes out her cell so that other eggs can be laid in there. And then she quickly becomes a nurse bee after that. So her glands start to produce royal jelly so she can feed the new babies and, hang out and tell them stories and whatever she does in the nursery there. And then eventually her wax glands will come in. And so I'm sure that's an exciting day for a honeybee to be like, whoa, look, my wax glands just came in. They probably throw like a little celebration party or something. I don't know. Cupcakes, honey cakes, honey buns. But so then she can move around and still become a house bee, but she might produce some comb, produce wax, stringing and festooning chains and making the comb and doing some different things like that, moving around incoming nectar and pollen. And then she might get assigned some other different little things as she's starting to grow up a little bit more, but her juvenile hormones start to kick in. So she starts to listen to rock music and be really defiant. seriously, she just gets really attracted to light is what happens with the juvenile hormones really kick in. And so that's the thing that encourages them, because this is all those tasks are in the first couple of weeks of a honeybee's life, and it's all done in darkness. So she starts to get this attraction to this light, and so she'll start to go to the front of the hive, and then she'll get out there. Eventually, she'll be so attracted to it that she'll go out on the front porch. And then usually around 11 or 5 in the during the day, so it can vary, but around those times, you can usually see them. There'll be a bunch of bees that will just be bubbling around in the front of the entrance, and they'll be bubbling around, and they'll land, and then they'll bubble around and like fly the other way and land, and they're doing these test flights. And there's usually like a bee there with a little wax clipboard checking them off if they pass their test flight. And then if they do, then they get to go out to be a forager bee, which that seems like absolutely magical. I could not imagine that day when you dive off that front landing board
right.
and into the foraging flower nectar awesomeness, you
wow.
know. So then she gets to go out, and then she gets to collect one of the four needs, which are water, propolis that we talked about, nectar, which they bring in and fan down as honey, or water. And water is actually the last job that she would get. She'd get assigned that at the very end of her life, and then she will die outside the hive because she doesn't want to create any more work for her sisters.
Wow.
So they're very diligent for sure. So that's basically the day in the life of the honeybee. The only thing I didn't mention was these wonderful waggle dances that they do that are pretty fascinating. They're actually giving direction. So a lot of people think when the when honeybees are doing waggle dances, they think are foraging, they think that they're following each other different places, but they're really not. What they're doing is they come in and they do this, they give a little sample of the food, just like in the grocery store, give little samples out to their sisters. And then they say, you know, with their dance, and they get down like James Brown, like they're almost about to fall over. It's like just so when they get really excited about this one source, and they'll be communicating like, you know, 30 degrees to the sun, you know, 15 kilometers this way, there's this amazing nutrition source, and it's so awesome, and you guys have to come. And then those worker bees, will take that information, and they will go fly off and use those directional navigational skills to find that source. They're not following anybody, they're actually using their navigational skills to get there. And they use those same waggle dances in swarms as well. So, and then the queen bee, she's always the rock star of the hive. Everybody's always like, yeah, and she is. She's pretty awesome. Everything is really dependent on her. The drones that she's mated with and her genetic makeup are what makes or breaks a hive. It's their temperament, their size, and their productivity. And that social glue, she's the social glue that sort of like pulls everything together, because the scent that she makes identifies that colony, and everybody knows themselves based on that smell, you know. So like here in Asheville, we sort of all know we're Ashevillians, because maybe a lot of us smell a little bit more like patchouli and amber and
person
and smell. Yeah, like, yeah, that's funny. Worker bees are their whole bodies are covered with this cute hair all over them, and it's actually part of their communication system. And I often joke about how, like, you know, if we all would let our hair grow back out, maybe we'd be
yes.
better communicators.
Yes.
So I think everybody here in Asheville is really great communicators because
Funny.
Of our extra hair growth. So, but yeah, she's pretty fascinating. The queen being able to live those 5 years is pretty fascinating. And she spends all her days in the hive. She never goes out of the hive unless she swarms, and that would be the only other time. But her only time that she goes out is for her mating flights, and it's a pretty wild time in the sky.
So mating doesn't happen in the hive. It happens in the air?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Whoa. It's pretty fascinating. Yeah.
That's cool.
It's pretty wild. That definitely makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. I know the drones get like a bad rap. They're like, they're not good for anything, but they are really great for mating. Their only purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They're like
mm-hmm.
sperm with wings, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, but they're it's pretty cool. They're like larger than the workers, and they have like larger eyes, so they can better find the queen in the air. And they go to these drone congregations, and the queens find them too, and the queen only gets mated one time in her life, but they will not accept her if she hasn't mated with any less than 15. They really like her to go out there and have a, you know, wild time with like 30
so
dudes.
She can't get back in the house unless
They'll kick her
wow.
out. They'll
quite the opposite.
They'll check her out and be like, girl, you gotta get back out there. You got work to do. But they don't have any stinger, and so I do have a fun thing I like to do with the drones is I like to collect a bunch of them and put them in my mouth, and when I'm at the store, and then I'll walk in the store and like I'll wait for somebody to ask me a question, and then the drones will fly out and they'll be like, she's crazy. She's untamable.
That's great.
So it's pretty fun. But sometimes somebody will take too long to ask me, and they'll tickle me and make my saliva glands. And then it just looks gross. It's just like, it's like, the whole plan goes awry. But it's pretty fascinating to think that these dudes, to get their genetics out there, what they have to do, they live about 60 to 90 days. And they got to, you know, get to that. They got to find the drone congregation. They got to, like, find the queen. They got to, you know, hook up with her, sometimes remove the genitals of the dude that was there before, and then be able to hook up and catch her to be able. So it's crazy to think of that, you know, that he's really got to work really hard. So that's why he consumes all that honey and works out all the time.
Right,
buff guys.
My goodness. Whoa. I think I need a smoke. Again, local fauna. We've been talking with Sarah McKinney about bees and beekeeping. And I want to briefly mention the items that we have on our altar. Sarah brought some wonderful comb from her one of her hives. There's some pictures of my dad in 76 managing his bees, and a lovely image, a collage of Elizabeth I with the famous phrase, Dux Femina Facti, from her defeat of the Spanish Armada. And it celebrates that a female has led the exploit. That's what that says, in honor of the mostly female hive, as you just incredibly magically described. And so you were going to say something about the support that the store provides, and then I'd like to hear about your personal relationship to your work and how you got involved with this in our last few minutes together.
Sure, yeah. I was just going to say that some often people ask, I feel like I should say something really important, like, because I'm clearing my throat. This is important, is that at the store, since we do so much service work, that's another way that you can save honeybees, is you can just support our store. You know, coming out, you know, if you don't want to keep bees, just buy a t-shirt or a coaster, and that really, really helps us do what we're doing and keep bees alive every day by supporting beekeepers. So that's another great thing that folks can do. But as far as like how you so how I got,
how did you get into it, and what does it mean to you? How have the bees helped heal you, as you said before?
So so bees definitely are very spiritual to me. They teach me so many things, and definitely working with them is an experience that's just beyond words. And I think even anybody out there who's a beekeeper, even commercial beekeepers who are amazing, by the way, they, you know, a lot of people down the commercial beekeeper, but we always have to remember that it's not their fault that we have a broken agricultural system. They're propping us up, and they're why we eat. So it's always good to remember that. But even talking, you know, to any beekeeper, it always gets spiritual on some level, you know, unexpectedly sometimes. But the bees really, they really saved me. I had a pretty rough patch there in my marriage, and it was a pretty unhealthy, dangerous situation, and I didn't have any way to really get myself out, and the bees really saved me. They allowed, it was considered a hobby, so I was allowed to do that, and my hobby started with, went to bee school and got one hive, and turned it into two that year, maybe might have turned it into three that year, I can't quite remember, and then turned it into five the next year, and 20, and I just have never looked back. I've just been with the bees, you know, doing their work. I'm when I say, someone says I'm a beekeeper, in my head I'm always thinking, no, I'm actually kept by the bees. They take good care of me, and they help me find a way to make a living and get out of a pretty dangerous and bad situation and hold my own. And I'm forever grateful for them for that. They are absolutely amazing, and they keep my lights on, they keep my kids and I fed, and yeah. And the store is definitely sprouted from that work that I do with the bees, and they're constantly teaching me what I need to do and where I need to put my focus, and the store. And I can't say enough about Julie Jensen too. She's a big part of the store and really made that happen and made all of that come to fruition. And so it's a wonderful experience.
Wow. It sounds like you have a really wonderful life, and I'm really appreciative that you're here in our community doing this work and helping support such an important aspect of our world. And I know there, you know, I hear a lot of angst on social media, and I think this is an important thing that can make a difference. And so thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
And so honeyinthehivenc.com is the URL, right? Where people
yes.
can find you.
Yes.
Okay. And you're also on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Sarah McKinney, for being with
yeah.
me today.
Thanks
it's
for
been
having
wonderful
me.
And really fun. And yeah, I'll talk to you again soon. And folks, please do check out Honey in the Hive in Weaverville when you get time.